Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me and I got my regular personalized privacy report. I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/ETM. Go to joindeleteme.com/ETM and use code ETM for 20% off. Shauna here. Welcome to Everyone's Talking Money podcast. So good to have you. Have you ever wondered, what am I supposed to do, and more importantly, not supposed to do at work? Like, what questions are acceptable to ask? Am I really supposed to negotiate for a raise? And if so, what in the world do I actually say? In this episode, Jenny Foss, CEO of JobJenny.com and author of Do This, Not That Career, has got you covered with all the to-dos and not-to-dos. Welcome to Everyone's Talking Money podcast. I'm your host, Shauna Game. There's no judgment, no dumb questions, just smart conversations about you and your money. So come on in and grab a seat. Everyone is welcome here. Let me take you back a little bit if I can. My one and only corporate job in my 20s was with a real estate mortgage company. And I had the boss. You know, the one who does all of the inappropriate things. Yep. I'm talking about watching porn on his computer while everyone else was subjected to seeing it and hearing it very loudly, I might add. Oh, and get this one. He was also having an affair with someone else at work and wanted me to book all their hotel stays when they had their little rendezvous. It was great because I actually knew about the affair, and so I was in this really tricky spot. But when he would always ask me to book a king bed someplace, I would always book like two queens, and he would get really mad, and I'd be like, oh, that was all they had available. I don't know. It just felt like a little bit of sweet revenge because I didn't know what to do. So let's just say I didn't last long there, and I would just chalk this one up to what not to do at work. That's an extreme example, but Jenny's got more than 75 scenarios in her new book about what to do and not to do at work. I seriously am in love with this book. I wish I would have had it during my very brief corporate stint because it just breaks down everything that you need to know. Scripts, tips, workplace horror stories. We're talking about it all in this episode and everything in between to give you a step-by-step guide to overcome all of these very difficult workplace situations. So let's start talking. So full disclosure here. I've mainly been an entrepreneur most of my career, but after reading your book over the weekend, I really wish I had this book years ago when I was holding down a job or really any other part of my career. And I love it because you cover these like 75 plus kind of common workplace issues. We'll talk about a few of my faves in just a minute. But before we do that, you know, why do you think it's so hard for us to navigate the workplace and figure out how to thrive?
There are a number of reasons. A big one is that we lack confidence and trust in ourselves, especially when we're facing the need or the desire to make a change. So if you've been laid off or if you're realizing you're on the wrong trajectory, that's something that needs to be addressed. But I think for a lot of people, it's hard because we doubt our intuition, or we have people around us who have different designs around how we should proceed in our careers. So a big part of this is confidence in yourself and also the knowledge of how to advocate for yourself and for your career.
So talk to me a little bit about are there positive workplace changes that have happened since COVID? Are they positive? Are they negative? Like, what are we seeing as sort of the lasting remnants of that time?
We've seen a lot of change, that's for certain. And yes, actually, there have been some positives. Certainly, the way in which we work, we have proven out of necessity that a lot of what everyone used to assume had to be done in an office can be done and done well outside of an office. Now, that is not to say that every employer is embracing that on an ongoing basis, but certainly there are plenty of companies that are offering different working arrangements, whether that's a hybrid model or letting people continue working remotely. So that's a big positive change. And also one of the things that I have seen in my practice that's going on, both through COVID and beyond, which I don't know that we'll ever officially call ourselves beyond, but as we've passed the original hump, is that a lot of people are rethinking what it is they want to do professionally, because they want something that is more fulfilling. They want something that is more meaningful. And that was big, scary things tend to bring that out in people. And certainly COVID has been a big, scary thing.
Yeah, I totally agree with that sentiment that I don't know if we'll ever officially be done with it. I think it was just this, you know, really scary slash interesting slash mind-bending, you know, time yes. period that we all kind of went through. And sometimes I just walk around and I'm like, wait a minute, we all collectively had this crazy experience. You know, it's just so wild to me that happened. And it's really interesting to see, you know, in the corporate world, how companies are adapting or not adapting, and how, you know, a lot of companies now are saying, no, like, we absolutely need you back in the office. Like, there's absolutely no choice. And if you don't come back, sorry, you don't have a job. Sure. And then there are other companies that are like, hey, we've been work from home for years, way before COVID, and we actually love it. Our employees love it. So I don't know. I think it's really putting people in a interesting place to deciding what's okay with them and what they want for their life going forward.
It's a very unusual time for professionals. Absolutely. Just a lot of moving parts right now.
To put it mildly. Well, I want to dive into some of these like super actionable tips from your book. And I want to start with one of my personal favorites. So this is around negotiating,
right?
So you want to negotiate an offer that you get. And you say, you know, don't chicken out, which so many of us do.
Yes.
But instead, like, really prepare yourself. And you say prepare a data-backed proposal outlining, you know, what you want, why you're requesting it, and the value that you're going to provide for it.
Yes.
How do we know what is the right amount to negotiate for? How do we figure that piece out?
Certainly, there are all kinds of online resources that you can tap into to do salary research, both in your vocation, but also in your geography. So getting a handle on what is the median range for someone in this marketing manager role that I'm going after, and using that as a basis as you start those conversations. And also, in addition to understanding the ranges, is getting a handle on what it is that will be expected of you and the return on investment or the value that's going to add to the organization can be a big part of what you lead with as you work to negotiate a higher salary.
And we all know the word negotiation just usually brings out like sweat.
Terrifying.
Like, we just start sweating.
Yes.
Yeah, immediately. You know, like, why would I do that? And even for myself, I'm a big advocate of negotiating all sorts of things, and I still get nervous in situations. So I know how hard it is if you're standing in front of your boss or maybe your future employer, and you're trying to negotiate your salary or raise or whatever it might be. But go back to this idea of this like data-backed proposal. So how are we supposed to translate our value to our employer, a future employer, to say, this is why I'm worth this amount of money?
So let's do an example. So say you're in contention or you're negotiating a salary for a role. Let's go to that marketing manager job again. And you know that the team or the company is embarking on something, a new strategy or a new initiative where they're trying to do X, Y, and Z. And you know how to do that, and you've done it successfully. So that's a way that you could lead, where you could say, if I'm understanding correctly, you really need somebody who can come in here and do these core things in order for this to be successful. So I wanted to remind you that in my last role or whatever, I did something very similar with great success, blah, blah, blah. And so I'm hopeful that given the fact that there would be virtually no learning curve or whatever you want to say, you know, you're making that this is something that you would consider X, because there will be more than likely a much more rapid ramp up or moment of success, if you will. So data backed means if you can reference something that you've done successfully that is relevant and you know will be beneficial to that team, bring that up as you're making the negotiation. This company doesn't care that you want a nicer car or that you're saving for your kids' college. They, not during that negotiation stage, they don't. They want to know, what are you going to come in here and do for us? And what will that be worth us to pay you for?
Right. So it's the always like, what are you going to do for me?
Well, it is when you're at the early stages. Right. They're not hiring you because they want to be pals with you. They're hiring you because they have a business need, whether that's solve this problem, make more money, save more money, whatever that is. And they're willing to compensate you for your skill in doing that.
One of the things I love about the book is you provide also these ideas for like sample scripts or like what to say, or here's some things. So just to kind of take this a little bit further, like let's say, you know, I got offered a job for, you know, $75,000, just making up a random number, but I really wanted, you know, let's say an $85,000 salary was kind of my target. Can you walk us through like what are some sample suggestions of what to say and maybe what not to say in a situation like that?
So I often use what I call the sandwich technique, where you put the ask in the middle. The ask is the meat, and the bread on each side is giving your future employer assurance that you're excited about this, that you're planning to be on board and you're not playing games, you're advocating for yourself. So at the beginning, I would say, I'm really excited about this, very happy to be joining the team. I think we're really close. If you recall, I am considering, or I am looking for offer, you know, my next opportunity to be in this range. And here's why. And I hope you'll consider, this. So then you lay out what you want and why. And then at the end, the other piece of bread, making sure they know that you're already envisioning coming on board and leaving it at that. And so positive on each end. You don't want it to look like you're playing games with them. And also, and this is, I guess it would be what not to say, is allow for awkward silence in negotiation. And I know for some people that's very painful, but silence can help you get to yes, because the other person will feel your confidence. Confident people allow for those silences. But also, they may feel awkward and be like, okay, you know, we'll think about, I got to fill that void of silence somehow. So
that's actually one of the best techniques that actually my dad taught me when I was young about negotiating. I remember going to buy a car with him, and I was young, and we were in the moment where like we picked out the car and he was negotiating, and then, you know, he said the price you want to pay for the car, and there was just this long silence. And as a kid, I was like, oh, is this someone going to talk? Like, why is there no talking going on? You know,
my daughter would have been kicking me under the table.
Yeah. And we ended up like starting to walk out the door. You know, I'm like, wait a minute, we have the car we want. We're like, I don't understand this equation, you know? And then of course the guy called us back in and we ended up making the deal. But, you know, I remember him saying to me like, Shauna, you have to learn how to be uncomfortable in that silent moment and wait for, you know, response once you throw out whatever it is you're negotiating for.
Yes. Another technique is asking that individual for their advice or their input. So making it feel like it's partially their decision, using phrases like, are you authorized to make a decision of X? So you're leaning into them and making them feel like they have more of the power. But really, if you boil it all down, it's you need to have some sort of justification when you ask for that extra money. So think through what you want to lead with. Don't just come out with, oh, but I want more, right? Why? that's just dumb to just, oh, I just had it in my head that I was gonna, you know, get 85,000 and not 80. Okay. Where do we go with that? Where do we go with that negotiation?
I like the sandwich analogy. I think we can all remember that, like the two pieces of bread hold the actual meat together. And that's the part we're asking about. Another one that I think a lot of us can relate to is, you know, if you get a bad performance assessment or whatever that looks like at your company and you don't agree with it, maybe you don't think you did a bad job. But, you know, if we're talking about money, our job performance usually has some determination of whether we're going to get a raise, right, or whatever it might be. So, you know, we really don't want that bad performance review. But let's say you don't lose your cool. But, you know, what do you do if you get a bad performance review and your, you know, your raise or whatever might be tied to that?
Let yourself feel the emotions first before you act. So that's number one, because there, I can't think of one person among us that feels good when we're told like, you're not, you know, up to snuff. So that's a really hard thing, is accepting that criticism. So let it sink in first. And then try and spend a little bit of time objectively considering, like, is there something to this? And if you truly think there is not, you can go back and say, I really want to understand how you came to this. Can you share with me specifics, like specific examples, or what were the metrics that you were using to make this evaluation? Because sometimes it's very subjective, like when you get a bad review, and sometimes it's for the wrong reasons, like you cough all day at work and it bothers me, so we're going to give you a bad review. I mean, that's an extreme example, but you want to really...
I would imagine that it happens.
You want to understand specifically what the basis of that evaluation was if you don't. If you still don't agree, you can, of course, go meet with your HR team and say, I'm not sure what to do. I've been given this review. I've been asked to sign it. I've got these emails to show. Maybe they say, hey, the customers don't really like you. Well, maybe you have 30 emails in your inbox of customers who have raved about you. So this is where you want to be able to bring forth some of that evidence in a calm way and ask, you can ask, can we revisit this? Can we revisit this now? Can we revisit this in 30 days or whatever? But it's not a you know, it's not the kiss of death if you get one lackluster review, but I wouldn't just roll over if you disagree with it.
We're going to take a quick break for our episode sponsors. When we come back, Jenny's going to be sharing some of her biggest career lessons that she's learned over the years. In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Talkin' Money under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC. I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden mountain doodle, full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family, and you want to do the best for them. But vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince, and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout-friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/etm for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/etm to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/etm. And what about, let's say maybe you get a good performance review and the talk about bonus or salary raise comes up. Is there any room in there to negotiate that, or is that usually pretty much a set amount from the company?
I think that depends on the company, really. There are companies that have very narrow bands of if you do this, then you get that. But certainly there are other companies that there is flexibility in that. And certainly when you do earn a rave review or you're up for a bonus or a promotion, that's a wonderful time to open conversation about the specifics of it or about maybe creating a plan for your growth and whether that's your title growth and or your compensation growth. So what do they say? Strike while the iron is hot. when you're the golden child at work, that's a good time to have that conversation.
And I guess it always is, you know, if you don't ask the question, you know, you'll get no answer. But if you ask the question, you know, chances are you might get a yes or you might get a yeah, okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I like those odds.
I'm a big fortune favors the bold gal. And it's crazy to me how terrified people get to raise their hand and ask those questions. And this is your livelihood. This is your career trajectory. This is your paycheck. And advocating for what you feel like you're worth, I can think of few more important things for a professional to focus on.
Well, Jenny, you've been a longtime recruiter, a job search strategist, the founder and CEO of an internationally recognized career website. I love this, JobJenny.com.
JobJenny.com.
What an amazing name. What are some of the biggest money lessons that you've learned over the years working with people in the workplace?
Oh, boy, that's really interesting. So I've been very lucky. I grew up decidedly middle class in the Midwest and never really felt like we were lacking, but I also never felt that my parents were really savvy about financial planning. I would see credit card bills sitting out on the table that were pretty high and it would scare me, but we never talked about it. Now, flash forward to my career, I've had and continue to have opportunities to work one-on-one with just absolutely brilliant senior leaders who are really intelligent about managing their career trajectories and certainly amassing their financial wellness. And so I have learned quite a lot along the way about, you know, the value of passive revenue, the value of investing in real estate, which beyond my current home, we aren't doing yet, but that's certainly something that I've been...
It's a goal.
It's a goal for sure. And it's overwhelming in some regards because I didn't grow up with financial knowledge, if you will, but it's also really exciting because I think I'm like a lot of people where I'm pretty good at making money, but now I'm feeling good because I'm learning how to manage and grow that money. And I'm excited about that. And I do, I credit many of the clients I've worked with over the years for giving me little nuggets along the way, which have been really useful.
Well, I want to ask you if you have any workplace horror stories, but before you share yours, I actually want to share one of mine.
Okay.
So one of the only corporate job I had, it's interesting that you brought up marketing manager earlier, but I was a marketing manager in a mortgage company. And I was on a small team, and my boss had, I don't know what you want to call it, but he loved to watch porn in the afternoon.
Ew.
on his computer in a office that was all glass with three female employees that worked for him. And talk about
mine will not top this.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about like awkward conversations, just awkward moments. And I just kept thinking, what in the world is he actually like? How does he think this is actually okay? I, of course, ended up leaving that job. And it was a very icky experience kind of all around. But, so I'm curious if you have any bizarre workplace stories.
I do. I also used to work in corporate. I was invited to join a technology startup that a former colleague had become the president of. And I don't even put this on my LinkedIn profile because it was that bad. But I was the head of marketing. I was tasked with building buzz about this emerging technology and growing the marketing function. And we were up for a major award. And the president of the company, in fewer words than more, basically suggested me that I bribe the judges to make sure that we get that award. And I said unequivocally, no, I'm not willing to put my professional reputation on the line. And if you want to bribe them, you go do it because I am not doing it. And so lo and behold, I discovered a few months later, I had asked for something out of my HR file, and I noticed that he had falsified correspondence between the two of us as to set me up to terminate me. And the way that he got caught was I had gone through a divorce while I was in that role, and he addressed the letter between the two of us to the wrong person. So it was the wrong name. And there was no way he would have known the other name.
Oh, that's great.
So yeah, that was a bit disastrous. And then I had him in my office crying, telling me he was dying. And that's the only reason he had done it. I mean, it was nuts. It was absolutely nuts. So yeah.
That's a pretty bad one. I will have to say that is a pretty bad one. I think probably almost everyone listening, unfortunately, we all have some sort of horror story.
Check your HR file.
Exactly. So how did you decide, of all the career experience and advice that you share, like how did you distill that down into what you actually wanted to share in this book?
Good question. So the publisher, which is Simon & Schuster, they had an idea for this book, which was great. And when they ran it by me, I'm like, this thing is going to be a good read for people, but wanted to segment it into areas of job search. If you're looking for a job, or how are you going to get along with people in the workplace, or what happens if you're looking to grow your career, or what happens when you're dealing with just out there hard situations, like you're dealing with harassment or things like that. So really thought through and investigated in my own archives, what are those questions that people ask over and over again about their job searches, about what happens if I want to change careers, or I'm dealing with this in the office. I mean, my boss is a micromanager is probably a huge one for a lot of people, or I have trouble getting along with my coworkers. So we did start with maybe 20 or 30 more ideas for lessons in this book, and we got it down to 81. And each lesson is 2 pages, so it's a very actionable, quick read. Do this, don't do that, think about this. And like you said, with the scripts, say this. So for anyone who reads the book, it's something that could be read cover to cover, but it's also something that you can pull out situationally. Oh gosh, my coworker smells bad and I don't know what to say to them. I mean, there is a lesson about your coworker having gross habits.
Oh no. I would imagine that probably happens a lot, especially if you're in a close environment.
I had a colleague that cut her toenails in her office right behind mine. To this day, I can't hear that sound. Like, my husband knows to just go away if he's doing that.
Go somewhere else. Oh, the torture of that. Yes. I mean, I would imagine that's like, you know, for me, it's like someone running their nails, you know, on a chalkboard.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. I mean, you don't think about these things. You don't think about these things like smells and the environment and, you know, what if your coworker is going to cut their nails next to you, but all of these things make for, you know, the experience.
The overall experience. Yes, they do.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, you know, I wanted to ask you about this because a lot of my friends who work in the corporate environment always say to me, you know, Shauna, is it okay if I share my salary? Like, a lot of people now are in this place where they're sharing what they make, and you know, I kind of come from the place where that makes me a little bit nervous, but I understand the reasoning behind it, right? Trying to get everyone kind of on equal footing.
Yes.
So I'm curious, like, what do you think? Do we share our salary information? Do we not? Like, what is apropos?
We're at a very interesting turning point overall right now when it comes to transparency with your salary, because we're seeing a number of states and large cities like New York City that are putting laws into place that require all job descriptions to post a realistic range, which is an important step toward equity and salary in terms of people of color, of women, people with disabilities. And so do I think it's a good idea? I think overall, yes, because why on earth should we not be paid equitably with our colleagues who are doing similar or same work? I do also understand that it's going to take us a while to get comfortable with it, because historically, companies, hiring managers, they really held that information close to the vest, understandably, because it gave them an advantage when it came to salaries and compensation. So we are at a spot where I think it's very awkward. If you notice some of those salary ranges on job descriptions, that's ridiculous. It's like, oh, 40,000 to 240,000 is our range. So as we move forward in more cities and states, when this becomes commonplace, I think it's going to be beneficial for sure. I just think right now we're in that kind of in between where we're still hanging on to the old mindset, but moving into this new frontier, if you will.
When it comes to financial advice, you gotta trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Okay, friend, I want to know, what are your money goals this year? Are you saving to buy a house or maybe a wedding or a dream vacation to somewhere tropical? If that's you, please, please take me with you. Or maybe you want to just grow your emergency fund because, let's be real, life is expensive. I want to make sure you reach your goals, so you need Monarch. That's why the Wall Street Journal named it the best app for growing your savings. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. Here's what I love. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. You can change the layout of your dashboard. You can go between light and dark mode. You can create custom budgets and notifications. You can set up all of these automatic rules for your transactions and notifications, and so much more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving their product. Get this. They release updates every 2 weeks, and they even allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. This, my friend, is totally original. Plus, they will never sell your data to third party or show you ads. I think that's really important. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it is the top-rated personal finance app. And now, listeners of this show get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/ETM. That's monarchmoney.com/ETM for your extended 30-day free trial.
This episode is brought to you by Accenture. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Because I could imagine that that would lead to some very awkward conversations if you share what you're making and maybe a coworker who has the exact same role, maybe they're making a lot more than you
right.
or a lot less than you. And it's, then it becomes this game of like, wait, what's, you know, what am I doing that they're not doing? What are they doing that I'm not doing? And I would imagine that this time right now for, you know, bosses and HR teams, it's a really interesting kind of landscape.
Absolutely.
Of what's going on.
And funny that you mention it, one of the lessons in Do This, Not That career is about what do you do if you discover that your colleague who has the same job makes considerably more than you.
So what do we do?
Well, you don't beat up on them about it. If you have strong concerns about it, it would be a strategic and thoughtful scheduling a meeting with your manager, your collective manager, to understand the differences. But it's also being prepared that the answer might be something that you don't want to hear. It could be right. that we pay this person more because they do these things that you don't do. So are you ready for whatever that answer may be?
That's the other part of the equation. That's a head scratcher, right? Being prepared for that.
Well, and also being aware, I'm sorry, just wanted to mention being aware that people come into organizations during different times in the marketplace. So the marketplace can dictate how much we had to pay that person to get them. So if you took a job, I don't know, a year before COVID, and it was hard to land that person, they may be making 20 grand more than the person that took the job during COVID because they're, you know, I'm going to take whatever you offer me because I have no other options. So understanding that there are geographic and marketplace variations is also something to consider.
Well, we've covered a lot of my favorite tips from the book. I'm wondering if you have, you know, one or two that, you know, you're really super passionate about that we need to know.
I actually do really like the one related to what do you do if. And this is such a silly one, but it was a fun one to write. What if you do if someone keeps stealing your food and your drinks out of the office refrigerator? So,
all right. So, yeah, what'd you tell us to do?
Well, you hear horror stories about this. So what not to do? I always like going there first. Is you do hear horror stories about people who lace their sandwich with hot sauce, or worse, or they set up like a little video camera to catch the person in the act, and those retaliatory options can actually get you in trouble versus the one who's snagging your stuff. So I always say, Sharpie the heck out of whatever you put in there and put your name on it. Put it in some kind of really unusual or, you know, obnoxious container. So nobody's going to want to be walking through the office with like the bright pink unicorn lunchbox if it's not theirs. So that was a fun one. I also really do the one about if you're feeling like you're being micromanaged, working through that as well, because I do think that that's a very common issue for people. And there are some, I'm not saying it's ever going to be an easy thing, but some ways to approach that with empathy, because I think a lot of times people micromanage because they themselves are insecure or feeling threatened. So finding ways to approach with kind of empathy and where they're coming from in mind. So I don't want to give away too much. I want people to go check out the book.
There's actually one more tip from Jenny's book that we didn't really talk about in detail, but I want to spend just a minute chatting about because it's about money and I think it's really important. So you've probably been in this scenario when you're interviewing for a job, maybe a couple times, and the interviewer asks you, what's your salary requirements? So many questions come to mind. Do I say a number? If so, what number? What if I say too low or too high? It's just like a panic moment. And I find that it's really easy to just freeze and not know what to say. And the problem is that there really isn't a right or wrong answer. But Jenny says the worst thing you can actually do is throw out a number that is too low because you're shooting yourself down, right? We want to play up all of our skills. So if anything, I would just say always go higher than you think because that number leaves you a lot of room. There's a lot of negotiation room. It just gives you a really healthy place to talk about salary. But what makes this book so great is all of these like sample scripts that Jenny has in there. So in this case, she suggests saying one of two things. One, something like this. Based on my market research, experience, and career goals, my range is between X number and X number. Does that align with your budget? Or saying something like this. My primary goal is to find a role that allows me to apply my strengths while positively impacting the environment. Would it be okay if we talked about your needs and my background before we go into discussing numbers? So take these scripts, make them your own words, put them in your own voice. But I think in each scenario, you're actually taking a power position. So you know your worth, and you're not just letting the interview kind of live or die based on one number that you throw out. And if you throw out too low of a number, you've just like pigeonholed yourself in that place. And, you know, you're putting yourself in an awkward position that if they come back and say, yeah, we want you for this job, like you're locked into this number. And remember, their job is to try to get you at the lowest number possible, right? This is a business. This is a money transaction and exchange. And your job is to say, no, I'm amazing, wonderful. Look at all my skills. I'm going to be such a valuable asset. You need to get me for this number. And so it's this chess game that you're playing. And I love these sample scripts because I think they really help you even memorize something for you to say and to go in and feel like, you know, you don't have to like sweat and panic and freak out. You've got something to say and some words to really help you feel like you can nail this job and also like you can nail the salary piece. So I would definitely say if you work in the corporate world, go out, pick up Jenny's book, Do This, Not That Career, everywhere books are sold. Carry it with you. Use this as your go-to guide. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend right now, someone who you know is working in the corporate world and needs to figure out all of these scenarios and needs to know what to say as well. You can head to the show notes for all the links to our episode guest, as well as the sponsors who make this show possible. I'll see you back here, my friend, in a few days for a brand new episode.